Welcome back to Lungcast, the monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site HCP Live. I'm your host, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. Before we introduce our guests today, just a reminder that Lungcast is available on all your favorite streaming platforms. Subscribe to Lungcast on YouTube to get new and archived episodes, as well as interview segments and episode highlights as they come out. A link to the show page, as well as the American Lung Association and HCPLive.com homepages for Lungcast, can be found in each episode description. For those of you who prefer a podcast, you can subscribe to Lungcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and your favorite listening platforms. You can also register for more respiratory news and insights at both lung.org and hcplive.com. Over the last few decades, the development of biomarkers in lung disease, both serum and imaging, have allowed more precise targeted therapies to be used to slow or stabilize diseases such as asthma, COPD, and lung cancer. Pursuing the same method, the American Lung Association Lung Health Cohort is trying to identify biomarkers and lifestyle patterns that may accurately identify disease processes before the disease becomes clinically evident. This approach may allow for earlier intervention in and potential avoidance of certain diseases. Today's discussion includes our guests, Dr. Robbie Callahan, who is a professor in medicine and preventive medicine and the director of asthma and COPD programs, as well as the associate chief for clinical and translational research in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at Northwestern. And Dr. George Washko, physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, who are both PIs in the American Lung Association's Lung Health Cohort Study. They are joined today by Dr. Amy Olson, the Executive Director of Medical Affairs for Interstitial Lung Disease and Respiratory from Boehringer Ingelheim. I want to thank you all for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. The Lung Health Cohort Study leverages the national infrastructure of the American Lung Association's Airways Clinical Research Centers, or ACRC, which is 35 sites across the country to engage diverse communities and ensure a widespread participation. Now, the ACRC network is the largest nonprofit clinical network dedicated to asthma and COPD research, and its infrastructure has been supported by the American Lung Association since 1999. Now, as the first large-scale lung health study to be embarked on, the Lung Health Cohort aims to track 4,000 healthy adults between the ages of 25 to 35 at the time of enrollment over their life course to understand how and why lung disease develops. I'm going to take the liberty of quoting Dr. Callahan, who has stated, "By identifying early markers of lung disease, including environmental influences and genetic predispositions, the goal is to intercept disease progression before it becomes clinically evident. And the Lung Health Cohort represents a paradigm shift toward enhancing lung health versus reacting to lung disease." Now, this proactive approach mirrors preventive measures in cardiovascular health, offering the potential to significantly reduce the burden of lung disease and improve public health. We'd like to have Dr. Callahan and Dr. Washko start the discussion by asking them to explain the enrollees' experience once they are identified as candidates in this cohort, such as the questionnaires, tests, procedures, and planned visits and contacts over the course of the study.
Sure. Well, thanks, Al. And it's really great to be with you again to talk about the Lung Health Cohort. So as you mentioned, we seek participation of 25 to 35-year-olds who do not have chronic respiratory disease or have not been diagnosed with chronic respiratory disease to try to understand their characteristics at what we define as peak respiratory health. You know, we think lung function peaks in young adulthood, and this is as good as it's going to get for a young, healthy person as far as their respiratory function goes. And then, as you mentioned, we're really interested in the determinants of peak respiratory health and respiratory health across the life course. So we do have these individuals, after they provide informed consent for participation in the study, answer a variety of questionnaires. Some of the key questions that we ask are related to what gestational age they were born at. We know that premature birth can influence lung function across the life course. Interestingly, we ask these individuals where they lived at key points in their life, when they were born, when they started kindergarten, for example, when they attended high school. And then we use that information actually to generate an exposure history using satellite models of outdoor air pollution estimates. And then actually we can model social determinants of health as well to try to understand how exposures, both pollution exposures as well as environmental exposures in the built environment, influence respiratory health up to young adulthood. In addition to answering a variety of other questionnaires about behaviors, fitness, vaping and smoking and things like that, we then do physiologic testing in these individuals, spirometry in the clinic, and then that's followed up with home spirometric testing, which was generously supported by Boehringer Ingelheim in the study. We then do a CT scan in all of these individuals and ascertain a variety of blood biomarkers. By drawing blood, we get a scraping of their nasal epithelium. We generate nasal epithelial fluid by putting like a little paper strip in the nose and holding it shut for a minute. We collect urine as well for future biologic ascertainment. And then we try our best we can to keep in touch with people. You know, individuals, when they join a study like this, our goal is to keep them engaged in the study going forward for a long time. So we make interim contacts with them over the course of the year. That may involve doing home spirometric testing again, answering brief questions of whether they've had respiratory illnesses, and then try to understand continuously what their exposures are and what they're doing on a day-over-day basis. So that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of what it takes to be a lung health cohort participant.
A great summary. Now, I know the studies plan to follow these individuals for many years, if not their lifetime. So some of the answers to important questions will take time to find, such as the term you often use, the cholesterol of lung disease. Now, please give your opinions or views on that, but also explain some of the things that you may have learned already, or such as the portable spirometry you mentioned to experience, and how we may get some early learning from one or more of the ancillary studies that are also being included in this cohort.
Ravi, do you want me to jump in for this?
I think I'll let Dr. Wafko take a shot at the answer.
Yeah. So you're exactly right that some of these, we have to have patients that some chronic conditions that we aspire to understand really do take a life course of susceptibility and exposures. And we are working in other cohorts to at least align data sets so that we could build in silico an artificial life course across different investigations. One of the things we're doing is actually taking learning observations from these other cohorts and seeing what are the earliest echoes or perturbations in respiratory health that we see in advanced disease. Are some of these things present even in younger, otherwise healthy people? And an example of that is symptomatology, cough, sputum production, dyspnea. These are things that in other studies and investigations that Ravi and I have participated in, are highly prognostic and related to impaired respiratory health and predicting future clinical outcomes related to disease. And so even now, I think we're having a deeper appreciation of the burden of symptomatology in youth, the distribution of lung function, and we are beginning now to look through, as Ravi had mentioned, our CT scans. We had previously looked at even subtle measures of inflammation in the lung tissue long before people develop overt disease that a radiologist would recognize. And we're making these measurements and then tracking this back to things like symptomatology, to some of the activity monitoring that we're doing, and the whole gamut of lung function measures that we're putting people through. Now, in terms of the ancillary studies, we do have some exciting ongoing projects going on that are really taking a deeper look into the lung. And indeed, one is called the Deep Lung Phenotyping Study. And we're doing advanced physiologic testing to look at some of the structure and function of the small airways. We're also using other imaging technology to look at the microstructure of the lung and seeing how we can relate that back to things like symptoms. Truly, we don't know the structural basis for respiratory symptoms. And so I think we can begin to untangle that, not in a lifetime from now, but even over the immediate future as we're collecting more data.
You know, it's pretty interesting. Sometimes I think this represents the learned helplessness of the respiratory community, where we say things like, oh, you have to wait a long time for disease to develop. And indeed, you do have to wait a long time for disease to develop. But you don't need to wait a long time to understand ideal respiratory health. And that's sort of the one of the biggest paradigms of this study is we don't know the determinants of maximum respiratory health. We know that if someone doesn't smoke, their respiratory health is better than someone who smokes. And that's kind of like the state of our knowledge. Pretty, you know, sad state of affairs. So, you know, sometimes we talk about the cholesterol for the lung, and indeed in other studies, like George mentioned, we've used proteomic biomarkers to understand who's on an unfavorable lung trajectory. But we don't know if we could measure that really early in someone's life, before the trajectory even starts, before the downhill begins, could we actually identify targets that would allow someone to maintain health? So I think that's kind of how we think about it, that why should we ever wait for disease? Disease is terrible. We want to understand what actually results in someone preserving their respiratory health as long as possible. And we think we can do that at peak respiratory health. And then excitingly, with the biologic measurements, we think we can identify biologically viable targets that we could intercept unfavorable pathways.
Great perspective, Robbie. So the study in researching lung health and lung disease prevention, currently supported from the American Lung Association and the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. Because of the importance of this study, funding has also been sought from other significant players in the world of respiratory diseases, such as the pharmaceutical industry. And although primarily researching new therapies to treat lung diseases, the more forward-looking companies realize that modifying treatments and curative treatments have the best chance of working if administered early on, or better yet, prior to the development of a disease process, as Robbie mentioned. Now, one of these companies is Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, who joined the ambitious effort in the Lung Health Cohort back in 2021 through a scientific advancement grant. This funding provided supplemental resources to support aspects of the study, such as recruitment and retention, site-specific infrastructure, and importantly, the home spirometry that was mentioned earlier. Dr. Olson, I want to thank you again and your company for its supplemental financial support. Please explain why you and your company see this lung health cohort study to be so important about respiratory health.
As an organization, Boehringer has a longstanding commitment to respiratory health. And our history includes significant contributions to the management of a number of respiratory diseases where unmet needs remain for effective therapies. The lung health cohort is particularly important to us because it aligns perfectly with our mission to improve patients' outcomes through innovative research and development. We believe that by investing in innovative studies like this, we can better understand the early stages of lung health and how it may evolve over time. This knowledge is crucial, not just for developing treatments, but for creating strategies that address lung health diseases before they even begin. And at Boehringer, we see our involvement in this study as an opportunity to give back to patients by supporting research that could lead to better patient outcomes. Our hope is that this study continues to succeed and brings forward meaningful insights that allow us to support R&D efforts that are patient-centric and continue to put patients first.
Thank you again, Dr. Olson, and your company. I want to switch over to Dr. Walshkel, and I think, George, you mentioned these a little bit, but you've been involved in several cohort studies looking at lung diseases, and I'd like to ask you to give a little more details around the CT scan imaging that is taking place on these presumed healthy individuals in the cohort, and certainly the implementation of low-dose CT scan screening for lung cancer, which is in certainly older population and more at-risk population, has been done and is an important mission focal point for the ALA. The uptake of this screening, however, in the population has been slower than we like. We also are aware that these CT scans contain a lot of information regarding lung health, and for that matter, heart disease, as well as looking for early signs of lung cancer, finding emphysema, bronchial wall changes, interstitial abnormalities in these asymptomatic healthy individuals may be able to identify those at risk for developing disease and may offer opportunities for intervention. I know I've asked you this a number of times, George, this particular topic, but can you give our listeners your thoughts on this?
Sure. Well, thank you. It's a big question. It's obviously an area that I'm very passionate about, but there's a tremendous amount of structural and potentially even inferred functional information in CT scans of the chest. And the technology is evolving, and I'll talk more about radiation dose, but the radiation dose keeps falling as we're getting to lower and lower doses to preserve high quality imaging. Really, the CT scanning and really all forms of imaging were rolled out initially to characterize advanced parenchymal lung disease, to look at emphysema, people with COPD, and understand their eligibility for studies such as lung volume reduction surgery or more recently bronchoscopically placed valves or glue. And we keep rolling upstream. So we've gone from what we think are the COPD characteristics to some of the pre-COPD characteristics, the gas trapping, the early measures of functional small airway disease that we may see on the expiratory CT scan. And as we go to broader cohorts, population-based studies, obviously we're seeing less advanced disease, but we're seeing a whole gamut of things, and that would be pulmonary, but also extrapulmonary manifestations of aging and the broader exposures. And so what we see in people with advanced COPD, for example, we can look at cardiovascular disease, we can look at cardiac morphology, we can look for atherosclerosis, we can look at the muscles, the bones, the metabolic state, and as you mentioned, there's other things in terms of interception for early lung cancer. We're also finding great use for that in the general population. So even people who did not smoke have a broader exposure pattern that may predispose them to certain conditions. And so we're seeing really in observational population-based studies a wide gamut of findings. And what we really wanted to do is then bring these tools to bear in the younger population, such as the people enrolled in the lung health study. And our primary concern with that is making sure that this is as safe as possible. And so we spent a good deal of time focused on making a very low radiation dose CT scan that we could deploy in this study and feel comfortable with that amount of exposure, knowing that these people then have still a life course in front of them. And if we can help understand their ideal, their preserved, their impaired respiratory health through the structural imaging, I think we'd have a foundation for a future investigation where we think they're headed over time.
I want to turn back to Dr. Callahan. With the enrollment currently at about the halfway point, I think around 2,000 right now, another 2,000 additional participants are going to be needed to reach your goals. And it's so important in clinical trials that cohorts have populations that are representative of society as a whole. Can you talk about the financial support that both the American Lung Association has been helpful in instituting to help recruitment techniques that have helped you reach the numbers of diverse populations that are needed in this study? Can you please describe those initial strategies and struggles that you had in recruitment and then the results of the ALM marketing effects?
Yeah, thanks, Al. Boy, recruiting into studies is hard. And recruiting into a cohort study of healthy individuals, it turns out, is especially hard. Because if you think about it, we're really just counting on the altruism of these participants and their desire to lend information to scientific discovery without any absolute benefits to them individually in the moment. In contrast, perhaps, to clinical trials where at least the prospect of direct benefit is often available to participants. And in an observational cohort, we're really just seeking to understand health. So we really need to work hard to engage people. And then, as you said, make sure that the population that we study is representative of the population as a whole so we can understand the determinants of respiratory health in the population in general. We initially, as a lot of studies do, really, you know, relied on a volunteer sample of people who were readily available. And that's okay in the early phases of a study. It allows our staff to get good at performing study procedures. It creates a base of participants who we know are quite enthusiastic about the study. But that's a biased population in study design principles that is just sort of readily available and in front of us. So in partnership with the ALA, we have tried really hard to use a variety of marketing strategies to invite the participation of broad numbers of people in the population. And those have included a lot of different things. They've included targeted ads on social media where people sort of see ads that are reflective of things they look at and think about on a day-over-day basis. So it reaches people who have interests in certain areas. To create those assets, we hired influencers who are really good at this sort of thing, different from me and George going on Instagram or whatever, but perhaps the impact is better if the people actually know what they're doing. We view those sorts of things as the base, creating broad familiarity with the study and credibility about the study in as many people as possible. Then we've sort of gone to one level up, which is direct invitations to people. So we actually purchase names of people in various metropolitan areas and various parts of metropolitan areas of various demographic characteristics. And we invite them directly to participate through email to join the study. And, you know, because we're focused on this being an altruistic contribution to better understand respiratory health, you'll see our invitation is always to belong to something bigger, with our logo, you know, being this dangling puzzle piece where we're trying to really put together the pieces of respiratory health and engage a generation of individuals. You know, we actually had a scientific report that's in the literature about what motivates someone to participate in a research study. We did this through a bunch of qualitative interviews in 25 to 35 year olds, our target demographic. And one of the biggest motivators described by these potential participants in a variety of interviews was this idea of belonging to part of a solution, to contributing to sort of the good of something directly, because they know it's going to lead to something bigger. So we've really tried to focus our approach to this as an opportunity to contribute to science and understanding around respiratory health and disease in a bigger way than becomes available to most people through volunteerism and being in a study.
But some of our listeners who are in that age group will consider joining you. It's very compelling. So before
perhaps
we conclude,
not as much as a, perhaps not as well as an influencer might, but I do my
All right. So before we conclude the discussion, I'd like to give you an opportunity to give some closing comments regarding the lung health cohort, its importance, and what you hope to develop as that goes on. And I'd like to start with Dr. Olson.
Yeah, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be part of today's discussion. I think as you've highlighted today, this study represents a crucial step forward in our understanding of respiratory health. And by focusing on how healthy lungs function in shift time, we open new avenues for addressing lung diseases before they begin. At Beringer, we're proud to support this initiative. We're excited about the potential findings that may emerge. Our hope is that this research will lead to more targeted therapies and new strategies that could be implemented earlier in order to support patients. The insights we learn here could fundamentally shift the way we approach lung health, and it could impact millions of lives. As the study progresses, we look forward to seeing how all the data will influence future R&D developments, not just within our organization, but across the entire field of respiratory medicine. It's an exciting time for lung health, and we're really honored to be a part of this journey with you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Callahan, Dr. Washko, any thoughts?
Well, you know, I just think it's such a great opportunity for us to bring the respiratory scientific community together broadly to really try to figure out a big ticket question, which is why do some people go on an unfavorable pathway and others don't? And we've relied on cardiovascular cohorts for years to try to reverse engineer our thinking about this with the information available and to actually collect really robust information relevant to respiratory health is such an important step for us to really shift focus from disease treatment to prevention to interception. And it's great. And it's our ongoing hope that participants will engage in that bigger bigger agenda that pharmaceutical companies will continue to engage with us because that's where therapeutic discovery lies in so many ways, and that the scientific community will keep generating more and more ideas that we can ask questions about in this population of 25 to 35 year olds, which in fact, there's no cohort of these individuals, right? A lot of our information relies on baby boomers who had different exposures, lived in a different time, and we need to understand the current exposures and the current population if we're really going to confront the public health problem of chronic respiratory disease.
Well said. Dr. Washko?
Yeah, no, I think I agree. And what gets us out of bed in the morning, what we're really excited about is something that we think we can prevent chronic respiratory disease. We're all very used to treating advanced disease, but if we can rewind and actually prevent some of these things from happening, it's amazing. And we're incredibly thankful for everyone who's been sponsoring this and really also all the study participants who are giving so much of themselves to stick with us and I think share this vision to be part of something that we can really change how we think about a chronic condition.
Well, I want to thank all of you again for your time and expertise that you've shared today. To our listeners, if you want to hear more regarding respiratory health, lung cancer screening, and CT scans, we have a great archive of discussions on our show feeds. Be sure again to subscribe and rate Lungcast on your preferred listening or watching platform, and visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters.